Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rab, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rab.
Hi, my name is Geeta Sidhu-Rab, and this is Activate Yourself. And today we're going to talk about, I don't know, is it the biggest hope, the biggest heartache, the biggest emotional event that can happen in not only just a woman's life, but in many, many parents' lives? Because I remember trying to get pregnant with my first child, and it was a really slightly dodgy affair because my son's father really wasn't able to comfortably help me get pregnant. And it was there were all these things, and it was invasive and it was horrible. And I didn't know what to do. And I remember in my 20s, I didn't know who to turn to and I didn't know where to go. And today we have all these rulings in the US around IVF and this intense approach to reducing the liberties and the agency a woman has over her body. And so there is nobody better to talk to us today than the leading worldwide guru in how to get pregnant. Please join me in welcoming the amazing Dr. Cleopatra. Thank you so much for your time.
I'm so happy to be here with you, Geeta, and to be with the people listening to this important conversation. And in that, you brought up so many things that are so critically important that I want us to tackle all of them. And it stirred up so much emotion in me because you're right. When you want to be a mom, when you want to be a parent, it is the most important thing in life. And we are at a moment when freedoms are being that we've enjoyed as Americans.
And that we're entitled to as women.
Yes, as Americans in the Western world more broadly for a long time now. And suddenly our freedoms feel like they're closing in on us, like they're becoming more and more narrow, which is the opposite of what we would expect to be happening as the years progress. We would think that our ideologies, our possibilities, what's possible for our bodies is also expanding with time. And as you said, it was such a lonely affair for it to be something that isn't happening as naturally as everyone said it would happen, and you don't know where to go and you don't know what to do.
Yeah,
and
it's supposed to be bunnies and off into the rainbow, isn't it? It's supposed to just be one of those things, and you wake up and you go, oh my God, I'm pregnant. But in fact, I don't even know if you had the statistics on this, but I know in the work that I do around cortisol and in weight loss and stress fat that from the women that I speak to, I swear nearly 60% of them need IVF to have babies. It's utterly terrible how bad it has become.
It has become so bad.
I had a conversation with my daughters and I was like, let's be very clear. If y'all are not pregnant by 25, we're freezing your eggs and they're like, are you mad? I'm like, no. This is what we're doing.
No, that's exactly. And here's the, I want to say, I'll come back to the statistics part, but let me just say, I think as a mom, you are so right on, and we're not having this conversation enough. And here's the thing. I am an older mom. I had all of my three super babies in my late 30s and in my 40s. And in our work at the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute, we really specialize in helping women who are quote unquote older or farther along in their reproductive span. Mm-hmm. We've helped women between the ages of 23 and 48 and a half get pregnant, stay pregnant, and have their super babies. But the average age of our mama is 40.6 years old, so almost 41 years old. That is so much older than the average age at first birth in America, which is 26 years old, by the way.
Mad, isn't it?
It's so let me just say that while I stand firmly for women being able to time having their children whenever they want to, as it feels right for them. And every day I am here for it, to push the boundaries of what we thought was humanly possible for female reproduction.
Yeah.
I deeply encourage my three super babies at their young ages, they're 10, 8, and 5 years old, to fall in love and have children early in life. And I will keep telling them that. I will keep encouraging them that. I mean, to do that, obviously they will fall in love when they do. They will have children when they do. But I'm like you. And actually, you know, we know fertility peaks somewhere for females between the ages of 24 and 32 years old. So you're talking about freezing eggs by 25 is very smart. I might even suggest doing it a little bit earlier than that, possibly. And I do think that it's really, really important to be having these conversations.
Yeah, but I think the reason you and I have them is because we're in the health business. And
yes.
We see what happens when you don't do this. One of my senior team went through IVF last year, and her first go through IVF actually had ended in an ectopic pregnancy, and
that's devastating.
One of her tubes, and I was like, you know, and it was terrible. And we were doing, because we speak all every week, and we were going through this process with her, mm-hmm. and I was like, that's so, and she was distraught and, you know, devastated. And I'm like, listen, I have one working fallopian tube, and I've popped out millions of babies. Let's just chill on that one.
Yes,
then,
yes,
you know. And then she went back and brave woman did it again. And
so
you know,
brave.
She spent most of last year literally trying me on my every last nerve, because she was mm-hmm. every hormone treatment known to mankind.
Yes.
And finally succeeded and had her baby, and you know,
amen.
It's wonderful, right? But
yeah,
that process is so brutal.
It's grueling.
And that egg harvesting process is so brutal, but it is much worse, the kids having to go through that IVF then, than it is them having the babies early. And the thing with the cost of living crisis and the issues we're all going through globally, it's mm-hmm. to have babies. They can't pay for them.
It is. And do you know that there was a study that showed that the vast majority of millennials are worried about their fertility? And one of the reasons is because people are becoming more and more aware of how common fertility challenges are, which is something that you touched on earlier, but also because more and more millennials are having difficulty keeping up with the cost of living. They might be living at home. It takes a long time to feel financially grounded and stable. And so people realize that the longer it takes to get financially stable, the longer it takes to get partnered to start having your children, the more likely you are to have fertility challenges or be diagnosed as infertile, because the number one predictor of fertility is age. Now, I'd like to talk about that, because there's a very nuanced picture behind that that nobody else talks about, which is what we really specialize in. But I do want to say something that I've never said before anywhere. And it is this, that just because we can have children later, and we make that possible, and I love making that possible. I made that possible for myself. I've been making that possible for women and couples for almost 30 years now. And I'm so proud of that.
You're amazing at it too.
We're amazing at it.
Yeah.
We are the best in the world at it.
No, you really, really are. That is not even a hyperbole. You literally are.
We are. And I'm so, and you know what? I've put in the hours, the blood, sweat, and tears.
Fine, right?
I mean, long before anyone ever knew who we were, I was in the lab, in the field,
so what
doing
was the
the
thing
work.
You're going to say that you've never said before.
What I've never said before is, just because we can, and we can in almost every case, doesn't mean it's the best thing for us. And here's why. It's not about the risks and all the things that everyone else is talking about. It's the thing that you never know until you have your own children. And even I didn't know, even working with thousands of families, which is, you will love them so much that you will wish that you had them 10, 15, 20 years earlier so that you would have that much more time with them.
Can I
and their children?
Caveat in there. You haven't had really shitty teenagers yet.
There's oh my God.
Where I wanted to sell them all. I would just like to put it out there. I would just like to say that when they hit 13 and then 16, I was like, I'm really happy to sell you little baskets. No, you can't do that. People frown on that. So I had to keep them. So I would just like to say there is that. And then I went back to being grateful for the buggers again. So yes.
They're amazing.
It's such a pleasure. And it's, well, okay, it's not always a pleasure, but it is an absolute joy.
And here's the thing, in the psychological sciences, there's the research around happiness shows that there are three types of happiness. And one of them is what's known as a meaningful life. And
oh, I love that.
Having children, and even what you just said about you haven't had teenagers yet and you felt like selling them for a period of time. It's this type of happiness. A meaningful life is not always, it's different from a pleasurable life or a pleasurable parts of life sometimes, right? It's not that everything's always peachy, that's everything's always roses, but that at the end of the day, this is the most important thing that you could be doing with your life, with your time. And there's nowhere you'd rather be in the scheme, in the grand scheme of things.
I have to say, one of the things I am extremely open about is that my primary motivation for everything I've done is the fact that I'm a mother.
Yes, 100%.
Without even blinking, it just
is. Yeah, of course.
So we're going to go now for a short break. But when we come back, I want you to tell people, Cleopatra, what you do and how you do it, because I think it's really important for people to understand that there are options, because one of the things they don't know is that there are options.
That's right.
I'm going to go on a short break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. Tell everybody what it is you do.
We help people get pregnant, stay pregnant, and have what are known as super babies. And I'm going to define super babies for you in just a second. But I want to really point out that we help people even under the hardest of circumstances. The people who have been told that their AMH level is so low that they're not a good candidate for IVF, the people who have been turned away from IVF, the people who have had repeated IVF failures. And by the way, your senior team member was so fortunate to be one of the few who only needed two cycles of IVF to be successful, because as painful and as much of a physical and emotional roller coaster and financial roller coaster as that is for people, we know from the scientific data that the majority of people need six or more cycles successful. After six cycles, still 35% of couples won't have taken home a baby.
Oh my God, that's awful.
And even on average, each one of those cycles takes 1 year. By the time the monitoring, all of the things, life gets factored in. So it's not just an incredible toll financially. It's not just an incredible toll emotionally.
The toll on the relationship is what I noticed.
Yes. The toll on the relationship is enormous. And I think a big part of that is because no matter how support, let's say it's a heterosexual relationship, and I'm only not, that's not to be exclude anyone.
It's just saying that
for mainly because we need an egg and a sperm to make a baby, although you can use egg donors, sperm donors, if you're in a same-sex relationship or whatever it may be. But let's say you have a heterosexual relationship, no matter how supportive the man is, he's not the one getting the transvaginal ultrasounds. He's not the one having to go in all the time, the hormone injections, right? So I think it really does take an enormous toll on the relationship, because it's really hard for resentment not to creep up. And
well, there's such an imbalance in the effect it's having on you,
right? And the labor, there's such an imbalance on the effect it's having you emotionally and physically, but there's also such an imbalance in the labor, emotional labor, the time, the amount of missed work for appointments, all of the things. So it is really hard on the relationship. But the truth is that what's the consequence or the cost that isn't talked about enough, that is the greatest, is the amount of time lost, because those are critical years in a woman's reproductive life that are going by without her exploring other options, because she doesn't realize there are other options. And they're also critical years that she's not getting to spend with her babies and her grandchildren, which is what I was just talking about when I said, I'm going to tell you something I've never said out loud before. And the reason I've never said it out loud is because it's only been dawning on me over the past year that we will always be a stand for women having children as late as they can. And trust me, we will keep pushing the boundaries into the 50s.
Well, it means that you're better at what you do, right? So it is what it is.
Exactly. We will always do that. And we will always be a stand for that. And I will also speak up the way that I'm teaching my children privately in the home, to say, if it's an option for you to explore having a family earlier, it's worth taking the time to really interrogate whether that's something that you want. Because for me personally, I was in the lab since I was 18 years and 1 month or 2 months old. Literally, I was getting my PhD. I was doing a postdoc. I was on the tenure track at the University of Southern California. And by the way, I was the first woman of color in history on the tenure track in the Davis School at USC, which, you know, that stuff is not for the faint of, it's a big deal, but it's also not for the faint of heart. And I had this belief, because I was born into poverty, because I lost my mother at birth, which is how I was given this mission as a little girl. I was born into it. I knew exactly what I was here to do, to help reproduction go well for as many women and families as possible. But I had this belief that I didn't have the luxury of having time for falling in love. I didn't have the luxury of pausing and starting a family.
You've got to become a man in order to succeed. There's no place where you start thinking, I'll just soften and be nice and feminine. And you don't have that space, because you don't see that as being available to you. You think you've got to become a man. That's what you're doing. And that's how you show up. Men don't get pregnant.
It's interesting.
Come into your lexicon of thought, right?
It's so interesting.
I'm coaching women constantly on this. And I'm constantly trying to get them to sit more into their feminine, not just for the pregnancy or anything, but because you're more powerful. Have vagina, have female power, put them together.
Yes.
Up as a powerful woman.
Yes. But who teaches us that when we're younger, that our femininity is one of the greatest sources of our power? Our vulva, our vaginas, our wombs are some of the greatest sources of power. Nobody teaches us that we are the creators of life. That's incredible. But I also really, like you said, I mean, I actually got criticized endlessly at USC and every academic institution of which I was a part. And I was a part of the best institutions in the world. And for being too feminine. My body was too feminine. My hair, my voice. I mean, I got criticized
too much.
Too much. Exactly. And you know, I got criticized more by women than by men, which was the really, really sad part. So
weaponize women's disapproval, right? That's what we do. We weaponize women's disapproval, because that's how society runs. That is the process behind tribal rules.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, because when we are operating in a male dominant world, we feel like we have to play by those rules. And if we are a woman who's saying, I'm not going to play by those rules, I'm going to be a woman, it's like offensive to the core of many of the other women who have felt like they had to play by those rules. They didn't get married, they didn't have children, or they only had one child when they wanted to have multiple children. And then they look at you like, who are you to be busting out, you know, three babies within the span of 5 years on the 10-year clock, right? Yeah, it's you and me both. So I think that it's really, really important to, if I could go back and talk to my 18-year-old self, I would go back and I would say, all that work will be there. Your mission, your legacy, you can build it more slowly. And there is time for love, and there is time for making babies and being pregnant and raising babies. And I didn't believe that that was an option for me. So I'm really, really clear with my super babies that I want them to really consider that an option and be thoughtful about it.
I 100% agree with that. And yeah. I say this too. My son says he doesn't want children, and he's with somebody where they're happy with that. And I'm sad about it, but that's
of course. Decision. Yeah.
But with my girls, they both do. And I'm like, we are so focusing. And they're like, you need to not be weird, mom. And I'm like, well, tough. Because
yes,
this is what we're doing.
This is not weird. This is this is important. Like we need to be more weird, because what's become normal is really a problem. It's outrageous. So let's talk about what's become normal in the area of fertility, because you've said it seems like 60% of the people you're working with are having fertility challenges, pregnancy complications.
Because their cortisol levels are so high.
Exactly.
You know, and cortisol, when your body is in fear, you know, obviously your version of, you know, so much more about this than I do. But the one thing I know is that when your body is in fear and flight, it is readying to run. A body yes. that's pregnant cannot run. And yes. it will not let you run. Therefore, it will not let you get pregnant so that you can run. And it makes you choose. Finished. It's very logical.
It's very logical. And you're exactly right, because the same parts of the brain that are principally involved in our safety and our survival are also principally involved in reproduction. So when the brain and the body perceive a threat to our safety, perceive a threat to our survival, which is what high cortisol levels are, a dysregulated HPA axis, hypothalamic pituitary adrenal cortical axis, is due to chronic stress and not being able to turn off that stress response enough of the time, then what happens is the brain and the body send signals that reproduction needs to be put on the back burner.
But it's hard. It's a luxury. It's not a necessity.
Exactly. Well,
survival is your necessity.
Exactly. Because from the perspective of the brain, your brain, which is so elegantly designed that it will always, 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 above and beyond everything else, prioritize your safety and your survival. Reproduction is a luxury. It is not essential. It is not a necessity. Even if the main reason you are stressed is because you're not getting pregnant or you're not staying pregnant, the brain and the body don't know that. So here's the thing. We talked about...
Hold on. What we want to do is we're going to go for a quick break. And then when we come back, please tell us how you help women to fix this. Okay?
Yes, absolutely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. How do you do this?
Okay, so we talked about how age is the number one predictor yeah. of fertility. And people might hear that and think, well, that stinks because I'm in my 30s, 40s, and beyond. But here's what people don't realize. This is not just about your chronological age, which is how old you are in years, how many years you've been on this planet. It is about your biological epigenetic age. And that is where we have all of the leverage. So what's so unique?
That is two different things.
Two different things. And thank God, because that's where we have the power. We are focused on slowing and reversing our biological epigenetic aging process in order to overcome the fertility challenges, the incredible odds that people are facing, so that they can get pregnant and stay pregnant and have their super babies.
What kind of things do you help them to do?
Okay, so when let me just give a little context for this. When someone is having trouble getting pregnant, staying pregnant. So maybe they're miscarrying or they're not able to carry a pregnancy to term. Or they have an unhealthy baby. Almost always, 60%+ of the time, there's one common root, and that is abnormality. Mm-hmm. And the abnormality originates in the health of raw material. Mm-hmm. So when I say in the health of raw material, I mean egg, I mean sperm, yeah. I mean fallopian tubes, I mean uterus, I mean digestive system, which is the mother of our fertility, immune system, and our microbiome, which is our second genome and also our second epigenome. So it plays a critical role in our biological epigenetic age.
Right.
So everything that we do in the Primester protocol is, and that's our flagship system and program. That's where everybody comes when they need help. And we teach them to Primester, live a Primester life for at least 120 days leading up to conception. And everything that we're doing in that time is addressing their biological epigenetic reproductive age. So one of the first things that we're doing, so we are addressing what we call their fertility and pregnancy pyramid. At the base of the pyramid is the psychosexual level, having to do with psychology, sexuality, sensuality. So one of the first things that we're doing is getting the brain and the body out of fight or flight, out of a state of emergency, so that the brain and the body will allocate the resources to reproduction.
Well, and you can go into being more feminine in that space.
And then you shift your, and exactly. So you shift your identity. And that identity shift is so critical.
That's so
because important. Think about it, Gita. In every part of our lives and in everything, having always starts with becoming. So when we are caught in an identity of struggle over fertility, it is much harder to have the outcomes that we want, to have the fertility we want, to have the super babies we want. But when we take on the identity of super fertile, what we mean by super fertile is that we know, because of everything that we've done in the Primester and because of the work that we've done at the level of our psychological hygiene and habits and our identity, that even if our fertility system isn't 100% perfect, it will work for us, because we will all have things that won't be perfect, but we can still count on our system working for us.
You also don't have to have it. Like, I have one fallopian tube that doesn't work.
Exactly.
It's never made a difference because the other worked enough.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be perfect. I mean, there are so many things about my circumstances that would have suggested that my fertility would not work well. And yet here I am. Obviously, I've lived Primester life for a long time, and that's prevented any possibility of problem. But I had lots of genetic risks, lots of social risks. I mean, growing up in poverty is a tremendous risk factor for fertility challenges. Being abused and neglected as a child, those are actually very strong risk factors for having menstrual irregularities, fertility challenges, pregnancy complications. People don't realize the profound impact their childhood has on their fertility in adulthood.
Yeah.
So all of these things, these are the kinds of things that we're addressing, these really intricate.
What is the thing after the psychosexual layer?
Okay, let me tell you the five levels of the pyramid. So we use the pyramid to simplify the complex network that makes up our fertility and pregnancy system, which is consists of 1,000 or more variables. If you see a diagram, it's this network that it consists of many variables, but we simplify it with the pyramid. So first level, psychosexual level. Second level, bioecological level. This has to do with our physiological environment as well as the ecological context around us, okay? Then after that, we have the neuroimmunological level, which has to do with the brain, the immune system, and multiple arms of immunity. Autoimmunity is a big issue among our mamas, because women with autoimmune conditions are much more likely to have fertility challenges and pregnancy complications. And then we have the social and the cultural levels. And again, if you're looking at a traditional perspective on fertility, then you're usually just looking at the bioecological level and probably 20 of the hundreds of variables that we're looking at in the trimester at the bioecological level. Nobody's looking at the psychosexual level, which, by the way, is the base because it affects all of the other levels, 100%. But also because it's always the key. No matter what tangible and concrete things you can point to explain the challenges someone's having, they have a low AMH level, which means their ovarian reserve is very low and they're close to menopause. They have poor egg quality. There's a problem with sperm. It doesn't matter. Whatever you can point to, still, the key to unlocking our own innate fertility is always, always, always at the psychosexual level. It is mind-blowing. You can count on it every time.
It's also an aging thing, right? You can tell that because today's my mother's 90th birthday.
Oh my God, happy birthday. That's amazing. Yeah,
thank you. And we're going to go see her and she lives alone. And she has refused just because she's annoying as hell. She wouldn't move into anywhere. And I'm like, come live in my house. No, thank you. I'll kill
she
you.
Wants her independence.
She totally wants it. And I have learned so much about aging when I have watched my mother. And one of the things is this understanding, because one of the things I noticed when my father passed was my mother became softer and more feminine and gentler. And she was definitely not a gentle mother growing up. It was not in her skill set. And I remember watching that and then looking at the way that my mother has aged through this process. Mm-hmm. This sort of what you call psychosexual, I think it is everything about who we are. I know that it makes us look younger when we tap into that version of ourselves. It's 100% part of our aging as well as having babies, right?
Yes. So that's really interesting. There's actually a theory called socio-emotional selectivity theory that is a psychological and social picture of aging. And it's about, and I think this is what you're referring to in your mom and in the psychosexual level of the pyramid. As our time horizons start to become more narrow, we become more mindful of, aware of the passing of time, we become much more clear about our preferences and priorities and values. And we are more and more dedicated to spending our time in a way that's consistent and compatible with those.
And it suddenly becomes urgent, doesn't
it? It becomes
what we're going to get to.
It becomes urgent.
Yes.
And I'm so happy you said that. I want to say something about urgency because this is very relevant to fertility and childbearing, especially when the clock is ticking. There's a difference between urgency and hurry. It's like my 10-year-old plays for Benfica. He's an amazing footballer.
Yes, I remember this.
He's amazing. And now the baby's playing and he's amazing. He's showing himself to be amazing also. And I'll hear my husband call out to my 10-year-old Luxor, be quick, but don't hurry. Right? So there's a difference. Hurry is compulsive action. It is harried. It is stressed. It is, you know, a squirrel chasing, running all over the place. And it is stressful. Urgency is conscious action. It is deliberately getting into motion, having a strategy about where you're going so that you can't just be moving fast in every direction.
Urgency is focus and hurriness is scattered, isn't it? It's not.
Exactly.
Oh, I've never thought of that. That's very clever. I really like that.
Well, and here's the thing. The biological clock loves and needs speed, but it does not need hurry. It needs urgency. And people might feel like, oh, but thinking of this as urgent is stressful. No, hurry is stressful and
urgency
it's scattered.
Is and depth and effectiveness.
Exactly.
So we could keep doing this for another 2.5 hours because I friggin' love talking to you. But tell us how people can find you, please.
If anybody needs help, they should go to fertilitypregnancy.org/consult and we will talk to them. We'll figure out what their best next step is and we'll help them get on their way, go moving forward move forward on their way as urgently as possible.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yes.
Cleopatra, it was fabulous being able to have this conversation with you. I'm now going to go send this to my daughters.
Yes.
To listen to.
Exactly. You're welcome. It's been a pleasure, Gita.
It has been so great. Thank you very, very much. So for all of you listening, I hope that this is, I hope it's given you some clarity around the process. One of the things I don't like about this is that what we do when we struggle with conception is we move into a space of fear. We move into a space of not understanding. We move into a space of being fed information by people that don't always have our best interests at heart. So I want you to be listening to this when you're not in that state, because then you'll make informed decisions all the way along, not just when you're feeling desperate. And I hope this has been insanely helpful. Dr. Cleopatra is deeply inspiring, one of those people that I really have spent a lot of time doing a lot of research on, and I love her dearly. So I've been very happy and grateful to have her on as a guest. My name is Gita Sidhu Rob. This is Activate Yourself. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Gita Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.